The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Adam Posen joins Constance and me now. He's a former Bank of England policymaker and president of the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington. Adam, good morning. So as somebody who has been watching this global economy, and you're the president of Peterson now, I'm sure you're watching Portugal's. Please weigh in on you and your team's view of what's happening with Espirito Santo, a small bank in Europe, but a big bank for Portugal, the parent company missing some payments. Is this the tip of an iceberg, or is it just sort of a random contained problem?
It's somewhere in between. It's the tip of a very small iceberg. You've got the asset quality review process, which the European Central Bank has been doing quite seriously for once, has since they took over bank supervision in Europe. And this has led to a number of things, which I know you've covered, like Deutsche Bank and UniCredito going out and raising capital. But this has put pressure on a good way, the same way the stress test did in the U.S., on the banking systems throughout Europe. And so you are going to see some failures. You are going to see some banks getting their troubles revealed. The thing is, it is likely to be mostly smaller banks, and it is likely to be mostly banks in Southern Europe, all of which have been basically cut out of a lot of the funding. So your reason it's a small iceberg is it's hidden, being revealed. There's more there than you see now, but it's not huge. It's not going to have the kind of ripple effects the previous round of banking crisis had in Europe.
Adam, this is Constance Hunter. Tell me why you think it's not going to have the same ripple effects. I mean, I tend to agree with you, but I'd just love to hear your reasoning.
No, thanks, Constance. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, these banks, there are three things that make it less likely to ripple out. The first is this asset quality review process and the scrutiny markets have put on banks in recent years in Europe means that while there are a few surprises, very few of the systemically important banks have big surprises waiting. And so a lot of this is already priced in. Second, more importantly probably, is the fact that nobody in their right mind has been saying, oh, gee, I want my counterparty to be an obscure Portuguese bank with a real estate portfolio. That's why the banks are in trouble, is because people are not lending them money in the overnight market or not lending them easy-term money. And so, therefore, the contagion in terms of counterparty risk is very limited. And the third reason it's unlikely to go on in a big way is because we have already seen the governments now step up, and they've said there is deposit insurance, there is capital to recapitalize major banks. There's not likely to be the kind of runs which we saw, for example, in 2008-09, when the original problems first in Ireland and then in the Caixas in Spain and Portugal. Mm-hmm. So all those channels have been largely blocked.
So does this is this something that the ECB is talking about as we speak? Do you suppose Mario Draghi is calling his council members? Are they monitoring this closely? And as Constance pointed out earlier, it seems that one of the kind of big picture questions this raises is if there is truly a bigger banking crisis in Europe, you know, there's still no mechanism placed to deal with it in Europe. There's no FDIC of Europe. There's nobody who can really step up and make sure it doesn't get out of control.
I think it's a fair concern. Nicholas Ferron, who's a fellow at the Peterson Institute, and I just wrote something on the European Banking Union, and we agree it's a half finished house because you don't have the common deposit insurance, and because, as you said, the major governments of Europe haven't agreed to a common bailout fund, really, at least not for bad debts that were accumulated during the crisis. But that being said, most of the countries, certainly Ireland and Spain, and now increasingly Italy, have taken huge steps to shore up their banking systems, to force their banking systems to write down bad loans. Even in France and Germany, we're seeing that now. And so to me, it's the Draghi and his team are definitely monitoring it, and they now have a whole apparatus there at the ECB to coordinate this. But again, it's not 2010, it's not 2011. This isn't the kind of crisis mentality, or for that matter, crisis requiring a big ECB response. If anything, they want to make these failures be demonstrations and show that you could have a failure without it being at the end of the world.
Let's get to the Bank of England meeting, you two. Mark Carney, of course, is such a, has so much impact. He is such a player right now in the world of central banking. A unanimous decision to keep their key rate at 0.5. Adam, you've been there. You know how delightfully it seems to me contentious the policy meetings can be in writing the statements. But is there perhaps a growing sentiment, even among the most dovish of the doves at the Bank of England, that, you know, if this growth continues, the interest rate increase has to come maybe sooner than later. Maybe Carney didn't necessarily signal that in the Mansion House speech, but he certainly threw that out into the market.
No, he did signal that in the Mansion House speech, but then he decided to basically do a U-turn when he appeared before the Treasury Select Committee the next week, because he understandably got a little freaked out by how much the pound moved and interest rate futures moved due to his remarks. But I think it does reflect a committee that, I don't know if every so-called dove, but where the vast majority of the committee is looking to raise rates. And there are concerns about the speed of growth, about the unemployment rate, as you said in the lead-in, but also there are, I think, far more legitimate concerns about the stability of the British housing market, where there's been this enormous run-up in housing prices in London and southeastern England, and the stability of the British balance of payments when they've continued to have import a huge amount and export very little for the fifth year in a row. So there are a number of reasons why you would be worried about stability in the economy in the UK right now. The two questions are, how soon do you start raising rates, and how much do you substitute what are called macroprudential measures, credit tightening specifically aimed at the housing market, before you raise rates? On terms of raising rates, it's now they're either going to do it at their November meeting or their February 2015 meeting, because they have a quarterly forecast announcement at each of those meetings. I used to think, and many people used to think, it would be February, the last meeting before the election, but I think now people are reasonably betting it will be November. I don't think that's entirely justified, but that's more likely. And then there's the macro pru question, and what's happened is Carney and the Financial Policy Committee, which overlaps with the Monetary Policy Committee, sort of waived the threat, or do something about housing if it gets out of hand, but they've increasingly been saying, well, we're not that worried about housing. Incoming Deputy Governor Manoush Shafiq just said the other day that she views housing as like third or fourth down on her list of threats. So it looks like they'll do an interest rate rise without doing much on macro pru, which is a shame.
You know, I know you're a big fan of macroprudential policies, but I think that there's some risks to tweaking that much and really having that much intervention in mm-hmm. the economy. And I mean, notwithstanding that I think your views on how they're positive or well published, do you see any risks to using macroprudential policies in this way?
I see costs, but I don't see risks, Constance, which is a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, anytime the government intervenes in the economy, and the central bank is a form of government, not in the broad sense, but in a specific area, there are costs, because it encourages certain interests and discourages others and takes prices away from where they would be anyway, and then sets up the prospect of future interventions, which is where the cost really comes in, because then maybe you encourage some moral hazard, like people used to talk about the Greenspan put. But the fact is, it's not automatic that just because the government intervenes that it's hugely costly and hugely dangerous. I mean, we have seen repeatedly throughout the world, including repeatedly in the UK, that if you have a real estate boom, it can be driven by things like, you know, foreign rich nasty people buying houses in your cities.
Or like Manhattan
or London or Vancouver or, you know, or Hong Kong.
And, there you go.
And, you know, that distorts the whole economy as well. And so you don't have a costless choice to make. And so, you know, that's why people like me and others say, well, you probably don't want to intervene when stock markets are too high, because, you know, stock market busts like in the 90s are not necessarily that destructive. But real estate booms and busts seem to be really destructive, so you're more willing to intervene. I mean, again, I agree with you. It's not costless, but sometimes you have to do it.
So, and a higher currency does mitigate some of that, right? It makes it a bit more expensive for foreigners to come in and buy new properties while...
Yeah. It goes both ways, right? So in the sense, you're right. The direct effect is currency goes up, makes the properties more expensive, look like less of a bargain, less inflow. The flip side is currency goes up, harder to compete with your tradable goods. So the resources keep being put into things like housing, which is domestic goods and not competing. That's the kind of imbalances that the previous Bank of England governor, Mervyn Lord King, would talk about, that you have a British economy that's skewed towards internal consumption and development and not towards external.
Quick final question, just got a little few seconds here, sure. Adam. Your view, the Federal Reserve, is it appropriate for them to be looking for that first interest rate increase even as early as March, as Jim Bullard says he's looking?
It's within shooting range to be any place in the first half of the or second or third quarter of 2015, but you know, the issue is going to be how fast they move after that first raise, and I think Bullard will be disappointed.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.